Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is John Steinbrenner, Professor of Public Policy at the University of Maryland, where he directs the Center for International and Security Studies. He's the author of a number of books, including The Cybernetic Theory of Decision, New Dimensions of Political Analysis, Principles of Global Security, and A New Concept of Cooperative Security. He co-chairs the Committee on International Security Studies for the American Academy of Arts and Sciences and was the lead author on a report on climate change by the National Research Council that was commissioned by the CIA and other intelligence agencies. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Steinbrenner.
Thank you.
And the report that just came out on Friday was supposed to come out, and isn't it pretty extraordinary to think that you had and others had worked so long on this report and you're about to deliver it, and its delivery to the United States government was delayed by Hurricane Sandy, the superstorm that most people recognize is connected to global warming.
It was quite ironic. It was an amazing event, actually, but we found it notable that the briefing was scheduled for the day that the hurricane hit.
So what is the sense amongst the intelligence people, the customers for this report that you've done? They're pretty much on board this. I remember speaking to a group of CIA officers who had just returned from Australia, and they'd done a briefing down there, or they'd been briefed down there, and they were kind of surprised that the Australian intelligence service considered global warming its number one priority. And this was a few years ago. So tell us about the learning curve here in the United States. Have we been behind it, and has our intelligence service been behind it?
There's no question that our political system as a whole is running way behind it, in part because of the prominence, frankly, of the deniers who want to pretend that the problem doesn't exist and don't want to hear about doing anything about it. But I think it's fair to say that anybody who is exposed to the environment, that would be all farmers, are very clear that global warming is happening as a problem, and most of the government agencies are as well, at the professional level. Congress, of course, reflects the divided political opinion.
Again, I'm speaking with John Steinbrenner, Professor of Public Policy at the University of Maryland, where he directs the Center for International Security Studies. He co-chairs the Committee on International Security Studies at the American Academy of Arts and Sciences and was the lead author on a report on climate change by the National Research Council that was commissioned by the CIA and other intelligence agencies. I've spoken in the past with a Canadian researcher, Cleo Pascal, who wrote a book called Global Warming, how the global warming will change the planet and change the geostrategic landscape, which it already is apparently doing in the Arctic with Russia and even China and Canada all vying for navigation rights for navigation rights and also for mineral deposits. So again, tell us about how the global geostrategic landscape's changing and how our intelligence services are waking up to it.
Well, you identified the most prominent thing occurring is the Arctic ice is melting and to the point where it is very likely to disappear in summer, opening up a shipping route that's much shorter, if you will, from Asia to Europe, for example. And so there will be jockeying, if you will, for position. But in the end, it's more like the main asset there is shipping through a 3 or 4 month period when the ice is not present. And it's reasonable to expect that standard rules will be worked out there so that everybody benefits, really. The deeper story is that the global warming phenomenon is a very severe threat to the globe as a whole, and that dealing with it, I mean, decisive mitigation is going to require not national competition, but intimate collaboration among societies that are not used to it. And in particular, unless we transform, if you will, energy generation in India and China, over the next 40 or 50 years, we're going to lose the battle on global warming. warming. And that means there's going to have to be much more detailed engagement with those societies, financing, technology transfer, in order to develop the alternatives on PACE, and that means we're going to have to alter the security relationships we have with those societies. The biggest story there, of course, is U.S. and China. Unless those two countries can collaborate, we are in big trouble. And at the moment, they're not prepared to do it.
Well, apparently, Republicans in Congress have objected to the CIA's creation of a climate change center, and they've tried to deny money for it.
That's what I informally understand. That was not part of this study, but that does seem to be part of the background.
And indeed, the capability of our weather satellites and that whole program is being underfunded and underfinanced. So we may be in a situation where not only are we behind the curve in terms of our recognition of a real problem, but we may be behind the curve in our ability to predict exactly when and how big these weather events are going to be.
It's true. Prediction, what you're saying, is very difficult here. I mean, short-term prediction they're very good at, and although there is some threat to the ability to do that, but longer-term prediction lasts more than 3 days or a week, is problematic. Nonetheless, you want to do the best you can, and are the assets used to provide information are not being tended and developed to the extent that they ought to be. That's part of our point, is that we need to do monitoring, much more systematic monitoring, and we need to develop a monitoring system that bits and pieces of it exist, but not a system. And so there are two stories here, that some of the current assets are degrading, and even if they were not, it would not be adequate.
Well, we just witnessed, of course, an election here in the United States where global warming was not mentioned by either candidate in any substantive way. And I think the reasons were that they were all competing in the coal states for votes. And coal is the real problem here, or the worst problem in terms of producing CO2. And China depends upon it enormously. And the Obama administration is trying to cut it down, but obviously it's running up against these electoral realities. What's the agenda that's necessary in terms of coal? Because this idea of clean coal is a complete myth from what I understand. And the coal companies, even though they keep taking credit for clean coal, they haven't invested a dime in it.
Right. Clean coal is an oxymoron. Those two words just don't go together in terms of climate effect. The people who want to argue that we can safely use coal have to believe in carbon sequestration, where you clean it up and put it back underground. And there's a legitimate debate about that, but I think it's pretty clear that you cannot take that technology from up to gigaton levels safely, because if you put it underground and it leaks, and particularly if it surges, you've just worsened the problem enormously. So although there's a debate about it, I think reasonable expectation is that when we get through with really vetting the various alternative energy technologies, carbon sequestration, which is, synonym for putting coal back underground in a safe fashion, it's not going to make it. You're not going to be able to do that on the scale required. And therefore, coal, we're going to have to allocate away from coal much faster than it actually runs out. And that's not good news for those people in that current industry. But it's fair warning, you need to be in a different business because we simply cannot tolerate the consequence of the environment. And, they don't want to hear that. And I don't blame them, actually. It's disruptive to their lives. But that's not a message that's debatable. That is going to be reality. You cannot deny it. It's going to get you eventually. And so the word to them is begin the process of getting into a different business or a different technology. And there's plenty of time to do that, but you're going to have to do that.
So again, I'm speaking with John Steinbrenner, Professor of Public Policy at the University of Maryland, where he directs the Center for International and Security Studies. He also co-chairs the Committee on International Security Studies at the American Academy of Arts and Sciences and was the lead author on a report on climate change by the National Research Council that was commissioned by the CIA and other intelligence agencies. Now, just to give our audience a sense of the gravity of the impact of global warming on the planet and how, as a result, there will be geopolitical upheavals which fall in the category of national security and international security. The Nile River watershed, where there's an enormous amount of conflict already over water and farmland, and if you combine the populations of Egypt, Sudan, and Ethiopia, they're approaching 300 million people. And my understanding is that South Korea and Saudi Arabia have purchased a lot of the land in the Nile Delta to feed their own people. And this is also happening in South Sudan and in other parts of Africa. Enormous amounts of land are being purchased, often by European and U.S. and Gulf interests. So if global warming really adversely affects, say, the Nile Delta, then you're going to have a competition between the foreign landowners like South Korea and Saudi Arabia and the local people, right?
Everything you say is correct, but that is not a particularly prominent climate story at the moment, because we don't have any solid reason to believe that global warming is affecting the flow of the Nile. I mean, there is increasing pressure there. But with that said, that food markets are getting global in character, and so we have to take that into account. At the moment, almost all the Egyptian food supply is grown somewhere on the Nile watershed, not necessarily in Egypt, but in the surrounding. But Egypt can be supplied from greater distance. What we have to worry about is climate disruption that affects the global food supply or food demand or supply and demand balances, and that could occur anywhere. If you're looking for a river watershed that looks alarmingly vulnerable to climate-induced disruption, you look at the Indus River, not at the Nile.
The Indus River in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And there have been some substantial floods, too, have there not, in Pakistan?
Yeah, that is a different climate phenomenon, but it's one of the expectations that the climate scientists are now seeing is that you're getting increasing extremes on both ends, greater drought in drought areas, greater floods in flood areas, and Pakistan gets whipsawed back and forth between those two things. And that's one of the phenomena hitting Pakistan. The Indus River water flow appears to be substantially less because of an anomalous situation in the Karakoram glaciers that feed it, and that is a climate story. And in addition, increasing temperatures are disrupting their product cycles. And so Pakistan is getting hit pretty badly by climate-induced disruptions, and you know, you could say that this is a slowly unfolding crisis. It's not acute as yet. It's the equivalent of a chronic infection. And that's big trouble, because Pakistan obviously is quite a fragile society. And the fact that they're experiencing very severe internal pressures associated with this is something that we all ought to pay attention to.
Well, my understanding is already climate change has altered the agricultural landscape in Australia, for example. They used to have some of the biggest rice exports in the world. And that entire area has just suddenly dried up, and that whole business just went out. They just went out of business.
Yeah, you could argue. I don't know the details, but rice farming has been done in places where it shouldn't have been done. Central Valley in California, for example, it's not a good use of the water resources in those particular places. So some of the adjustment is not necessarily bad. Actually, it's just forcing, finally, efficiencies that we should have recognized much earlier. But the general point, however, is that global warming will affect agricultural product cycles in many places, and that you know, the net consequence is not something that we adequately understand at the moment. But we need to begin to think hard about it and trace it, track it. part of what we're saying in this report is that the United States as a whole, not just the intelligence communities, but all the U.S. agencies, need to put together a monitoring system that includes both critical climate variables and social variables having to do with the reaction to climate change, so that we are monitoring circumstances in greater care, greater fidelity than we currently are. Because of our inability to predict exactly, we need to get early warning where trouble begins to emerge.
Well, already the U.S. military have adapted. They've spent billions on fuel efficiency, but they've also, the Navy's gotten involved in alternative fuels for obviously good reasons. If the Straits of Hormuz are closed, for example, and there's a major disruption, the military has to be able to operate on alternative fuels. And believe it or not, the Secretary of the Navy is being attacked by Republicans in Congress for hedging.
Right.
And it's just, it gets you back to this sort of know-nothing aspect of our polity here, where you've got this, in effect, the entire Republican Party are locked into global warming denial. And, you know, the American Petroleum Institute gave the most amount of money in the 2010 election, which brought the Republicans into control of the House. So you have this moneyed interest in funding denial, which is a national security problem, clearly, and it will get worse. Are there countervailing powerful interests, for example, on Wall Street? Wall Street just got its feet wet in the Hurricane Sandy. Literally, you know, the water came lapping up at Wall Street there. Insurance companies and the insurance industry recognize global warming. So in terms of getting allies, powerful allies, to get past this impasse that we have over denial, what can happen here, John Steinbrenner?
Well, the phenomenon itself is relentless. And so virtually everybody is going to feel it. And that ultimately will win the argument. The question is, okay, who is most likely to get out in front of this in a constructive way rather than a denial way? And the insurance industry is probably the best candidate because they unquestionably are encountering the phenomenon and beginning to recognize the very severe effects it can have. I mean, we are looking at increased frequency and severity of violent storms. And that is a problem for the insurance companies, and they're beginning to recognize it. I think it's very difficult to predict, if you will, what the trend of attitude in the United States is likely to be in any short period of time. But I think over a lengthier period of time, global warming will impose itself, and everybody involved is going to have to recognize that. And the people who are trying to deny it just lose the ballgame eventually. The question is, how much damage do they do in preventing, if you will, both reasonable adaptation and mitigation measures before they do lose the argument? And time matters here. So it is true, I think, that the advocates so far up to this point have been less vocal, less well-financed, politically less prominent, at least in the United States. That will change. It's hard to tell over what period of time.
Well, just in closing, John Steinbrenner, what kind of time do we have, though? I mean, we can't. The amount of CO2 that's being pumped in the atmosphere is at a record level, and it's exponentially getting greater. And the planet is telling us in no uncertain manner that it's being affected. What kind of time frame do we have before too much denial reaches a point of no return?
I wish I could answer that question better than I can or anyone can, really. What's the problem here is interaction between geological timescales, which operate over large numbers of years, and human timescales, which operate over smaller numbers of years. And the question is, what is the intersection of those two going to be? And I think all we could say is that there is prudent reason to believe that in the course of the next decade, we are going to encounter climate-induced social disruptions that are a good bit more serious than anything we've seen before. And they will occur probably at surprising times and places. That's the most you can say, given what we know. But if you do believe that, I think one it's prudent to believe that. I would say that within a decade, most of the world is going to have waken up on that, and we probably won't encounter some experiences that really do rivet attention. And you know, human beings being what they are, you have to bang them on the nose before they pay attention. A lot of people are going to be banged on the nose, and at some point, if you will, the weight of opinion will shift. I would say probably within a decade, but that is a sure guess.
Well, John Steinbrenner, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with John Steinbrenner, Professor of Public Policy at the University of Maryland, where he directs the Center for International Security Studies. He's the author of a number of books, including The Cybernetic Theory of Decision, New Dimensions of Political Analysis, Principles of Global Security, and A New Concept for Cooperative Security. He co-chairs the Committee on International Security Studies of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences and was the lead author on a report on climate change by the National Research Council that was commissioned by the CIA and other intelligence agencies. And we're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the end of the Reagan era.
Yes, sir, we're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. The way that she moves that thermometer proves that she certainly can.